Monsters of Mars by Edmund Hamilton. Part 1. Alan Randall stared at the man before him. "And that's why you sent for me, Milton?" he finally asked. There was a moment's silence, in which Randall's eyes moved as though uncomprehendingly from the face of Milton to those of the two men beside him. The four sat together at the end of a roughly furnished and electric-lit living room, and in that momentary silence there came into them from the outside night the distant pounding of the Atlantic upon the beach. It was Randall who first spoke again. The other's face was unsmiling. "That's why I sent for you, Alan," he said quietly. "To go to Mars with us tonight." "To Mars?" he repeated. "Have you gone crazy, Milton? Or is this some joke you've put up with Lanier and Nelson here?" Milton shook his head gravely. "It's not a joke, Alan. Lanier and I are actually going to flash out over the Gulf to the planet Mars tonight. Nelson must stay here, and since we wanted three to go, I wired you as the most likely of my friends to make the venture." "But good God," Randall exploded, rising. "You, Milton, as a physicist, ought to know better. Spaceships and projectiles and all that are but fictionist dreams." "We are not going in either spaceship or projectile," said Milton calmly. And then, as he saw his friend's bewilderment, he rose and led the way to a door at the room's end, the other three following him into the room beyond. It was a long laboratory of unusual size in which Randall found himself, one in which every variety of physical and electrical apparatus seemed represented. Three huge dynamo motor arrangements took up the room's far end, and from them a tangle of wiring led through square black condensers and transformers to a battery of great tubes. Most remarkable, though, was the object at the room's center. It was like a great double cube of dull metal, being in effect two metal cubes, each 12 feet square, supported a few feet above the floor by insulated standards. One side of each cube was open, exposing the hollow interiors of the two cubical chambers. Other wiring led from the big electronic tubes and from the dynamos to the sides of the two cubes. The four men gazed at the enigmatic thing for a time in silence. Milton's strong, capable face showed only in its steady eyes what feelings were his, but Lanier's younger countenance was alight with excitement, and so too, to some degree, was that of Nelson. Randall simply stared at the thing until Milton nodded towards it. "That," he said, "is what will flash us out to Mars tonight." Randall could only turn his stare upon the other, and Lanier chuckled. "Can't take it in yet, Randall? Well, neither could I, when the idea was first sprung on us." Milton nodded to seats behind them, and as the half-dazed Randall sank into one, the physicist faced him earnestly. "Randall, there isn't much time now, but I'm going to tell you what I've been doing in the last 2 years on this godforsaken main coast. I have been for those 2 years in unbroken communication by radio with beings on the planet Mars. It was when I still held my physics professorship back at the university that I first got onto the track of the thing. I was studying the variation of static vibrations, and in so doing caught steady signals, not static, at an unprecedentedly high wavelength. They were dots and dashes of varying length, in an entirely unintelligible code, the same arrangement of them being sent out apparently every few hours. I began to study them, and soon ascertained that they could be sent out by no station on Earth. The signals seemed to be growing louder each day, and it suddenly occurred to me that Mars was approaching opposition with Earth. I was startled, and kept careful watch. On the day that Mars was closest to the Earth, that was when the signals were loudest. Thereafter, as the red planet receded, they grew weaker. The signals were from some being or beings on Mars. At first, I was going to give the news to the world, but saw in time that I could not. There was not sufficient proof, and a premature statement would only wreck my own scientific reputation. So I decided to study the signals farther, until I had irrefutable proof, and to answer them if possible. I came up here and had this place built, and the aerial towers and the other equipment I wanted set up. Lanier and Nelson came with me from the university.